And we're back. It's Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Governor Charlie Baker has released his budget blueprint for the fiscal year beginning in July, and it contains some steep spending cuts thanks to a $1.5 billion gap that has to be filled. As promised, his proposal avoids tax increases, it spares the state's rainy day fund, and it increases overall spending by 3%.
Baker proposes to close the gap by slowing the rate of increase of Medicaid spending, shrinking the state's workforce, doing away with the tax credit for filmmakers, and ending the use of motels as family shelters. It would increase funding for the MBTA, the Department of Children and Families, higher education, and aid to cities and towns.
Much of the savings would come from simply maintaining existing spending levels. This afternoon, Baker said distributing the cuts across the state ledgers was a fair way to balance the books. He said most people will see some belt tightening, but they won't see wholesale changes in existing services. Well, joining us now to talk more about the governor's proposed budget is Noah Berger. He's president of the Massachusetts Budget and Policy Center. Noah, thanks for coming in.
It's great to be here.
It's always good to have you. Also with us is Jim Sturgis, executive director of the Pioneer Institute. He joins us by phone. Jim, good to have you.
Good to be with you and good to have Meghna back.
Yeah, and it is good to have Meghna back. I'll say that for the second time. Anyway, first of all, let me ask you both. I'd like to ask you who the winners and losers are in this budget. And Noah, let me start with you.
I think the governor very wisely identified as key priorities for strengthening our economy and helping working families to invest in education and transportation and in local communities. Unfortunately, I don't think this budget does make significant new investments in those areas. It doesn't do anything to expand access to early education for 3- and 4-year-olds, doesn't appear to do anything to make public higher education more affordable. And the level of investment in transportation appears to be way below what everybody knows would be necessary actually to fix our public transportation system.
All right. Well, we'll get into some of these nuts and bolts in just a moment. Jim, your quick take on winners and losers of this budget.
Well, you know, there were some protests outside the press conference, but I don't really see a lot to protest here. I think there's one big question we're going to face, and that's really related to Medicaid. But I think a lot, as you said just a second ago, Anthony, a lot of the programs have been level funded. I think the governor's been helped a lot by the growing economy. I mean, they're budgeting revenues growing by almost 5%. That goes a long way to mitigating the amount they actually have to close in terms of the gap. They are also doing one-time revenue move, which is to take $300 million in capital gains taxes that would be otherwise going to the rainy day fund, putting it into the operating budget. So a lot of that mitigates the need to actually go into steep cuts when they're facing a $1.5 billion mismatch between revenues and spending trends. Mm. So I think, you know, as Noah said, there is some work in there in terms of support for families of the working poor, local and school aid, more for transportation. I think the big question for me is going to be where the House and the Senate will come out on the big question of mass health, Medicaid, where it's going to come out in terms of state employees potentially paying more into paying for more of their health care premium. And then the last thing is the attempt to address the payroll issue. I'm really not sure where the House and Senate go with that.
All right, well, let's talk about mass health care. The biggest savings in the governor's budget comes from this. Now, this is the state federal health program for the poor and disabled. If I have this right, and Noah, correct me if I'm wrong, it doesn't cut it, but it slows the rate of growth, according to the Baker administration, from an anticipated 16% to something like under 6%. And so that would save about $750 million. But what's that going to look like in terms of will it actually affect folks who need the service?
The largest part of that is something that definitely makes sense, which is what they call redeterminations. That is, in connection partly with the troubled rollout of the Affordable Care Act here, a lot of folks who should have been redetermined, as the state should have looked at whether they're still eligible for the program, perhaps they got a job and don't need the coverage anymore or are married, a lot of those people stayed on the rolls. And a significant chunk of the savings is those redeterminations. That absolutely makes sense to do. He hasn't shown a whole lot of other details on what's in there, so it's hard to say. It looks like part of it is what they call cash management, which is something the state has done in Medicaid in the past, which is essentially not paying all the bills due the coming year in the coming year and just shifting costs onto a future year. That obviously raises concerns in terms of building in a sort of structural gap, which is consistent with other places in the budget. As Jim mentioned, there's about $300 million of money that should have gone into the rainy day fund. That's being used. They rely on about $100 million from a one-time tax amnesty. There's some smaller one-time savings. And then the proposal for early retirement, not at all clear that that will really generate long-term savings. So somewhere probably north of $600 million of these solutions are temporary or one-time solutions or questionable ones that might mean we're just going to face the same challenges again next year.
Well, Jim, I'd like to ask you about that. Does this budget cut enough, or it does it just sort of kick the can down the road?
Well, I don't really think it it doesn't address all of the issues in terms of being able to avoid one-time revenue. So as Noah was saying, I'd say it's probably more like $400 million or sort of one-time actions, including the capital gains move I was mentioning before. I would say, just going back for a sec on the MassHealth issue, this is one that I think the House will be very eager to take a look at this. Speaker DeLeo himself at the Greater Boston Chamber of Commerce, who's speaking to them early this week, noted that, you know, we've seen 50% growth in the program over half a decade. I mean, it's huge growth. Mm-hmm. Frankly, previous governors, including Governor Patrick and many of us, have sought hundreds of millions of dollars in savings in Medicaid before. I think there are two things at play here. One is, again, that redetermination issue. And the federal government has actually gone to Massachusetts and a handful of other states and said, look, you got to do this now. And part of that's because when we did make a mess of the connector rollout, we ended up putting 300,000 plus people onto temporary Medicaid without checking their eligibility. And, you know, you need to do it, and the feds are paying for half they want us to do that. But the other part of it is, I think Baker feels confident that there are innovative ways to actually try to provide MassHealth services in a different way. And I think that is, you'll see a lot of attempts to articulate that around whether it's closed networks for patients that have lower cost points and many, many other things that they'll float out to the House in terms of how they might want to achieve this. I do think that the House will be very receptive. I think the Senate on this issue of MassHealth will be much more skeptical.
Let me ask you about another area of his budget proposal. The governor wants to double the state's earned income tax credit, which helps low-income families. He'd pay for that increase by cutting a state tax credit that helps the film industry. We talked about this yesterday on the program, but I want to ask you both, Noah, is this a sort of an example of a fair, tough choice that has to be made?
Yes, I think it's better than that, in fact. I think it's just a good policy choice. The earned income tax credit is a really important way of supporting low-wage working, mostly working parents to be able to make ends meet, to be able to feed their children, pay the rent, pay for basic necessities. It's a great program. It's had bipartisan support both in this state and nationally. And the film tax credit is a subsidy for, you know, movie producers that, from most all of the analysis that's been done of it, just doesn't deliver the bang for the buck. It tends to cost over $100,000 for each Massachusetts job that it creates, which is not an efficient way of spending economic development money. And part of the argument for it is, if these films come here, they will, you'll make back the money because they'll pay enough in other taxes while they're here. And it's just not true. The Department of Revenue has done studies that show the new tax revenue that we get is less than 20% of the amount that we're spending on these tax credits, where we literally pay 25% of the cost of shooting a movie in Massachusetts. That's a very large subsidy for an industry that is a very mobile industry. There's no real evidence that there's going to be some golden day where we've built our film industry to the point where it'll survive here without these very large tax credits.
On the other hand, and Jim Sturgis, I'll put this question to you. We heard from a proponent of the film tax credit yesterday who argued that it does more. I mean, it creates jobs well beyond the industry. But I guess, you know, the same question to you. Is this good policy, a good choice?
It's a great choice. I'm actually really pleased with it. Something that we've I find that the film tax credit, one of these things the government really should not be in the business of doing, which is subsidizing rather wealthy people who come in, fly in, do some work, then they leave. And they can come up with all the numbers they want, but we've studied this to death. The Department of Revenue studied this to death. There's really not a lot of bang for the buck for this state, notwithstanding some anecdotal evidence of a florist or someone who's providing some fruit baskets for the crew that really likes it. It's really not in the interest of Massachusetts, the Massachusetts economy, given the depth of the investment. And this is a great way to support working families. These are by and large, working mothers who deserve the support, and frankly, the increase in the minimum wage is not enough. So this is a great thing to do. And I would say, in addition to that, I would say that Baker put his money where his mouth is on working families, in the sense that if you take a look at the Department of Children and Families, they've gotten a strong increase of $40 million. Families also pay taxes. There's no tax increase in there for breadwinners. And, you know, there's a $20 million investment in this, in a new program that's aimed at preventing people from becoming homeless, in addition to funding separately about $45 million for emergency shelters. So I think on that front, this is a good budget for working families.
Yeah, go ahead, Noah.
Yeah, I wouldn't go that far. I think that the earned income tax credit proposal is a very good proposal for working families. A lot of the rest of the budget doesn't make the investments that would really make life better for working families. It does almost nothing to make higher education more affordable or early education, and very little on K-12 education. In fact, you talk about winners. Probably the biggest winners are the very wealthiest people in the state of Massachusetts, which is to say the highest income folks in the state, people with incomes well over $500,000 a year, currently pay the lowest share of their income in taxes, less than everybody else. If you were simply to ask those folks to pay their fair share, to pay what other people pay, that would raise almost $2 billion. And $2 billion would be enough to make the kinds of investments that really would make life better for working people across the Commonwealth.
Well, let's talk about Baker's proposal to include more money for the MBTA as part of a 20% boost in transportation spending. Here's what he said today about this.
This is not a blank check. It is a placeholder. Our advisory group of experts is working hard on a reform plan for the T, which they will report back to us on by the end of March. And we will share those findings with the legislature and with the public.
So a reform plan there for the T. Jim, clearly the storms this winter have put this issue front and center. Do you think that Baker is going to get the backing of the legislature to fix this problem?
You know, I think he's going to find a very skeptical reception on this, unless there is a very clear plan for moving forward on reforming the T and getting it back to a place where it's actually improving the quality of service. I just talking to several legislators in the past couple of days when this has been out there, you know, you can see in their faces kind of, you know, the crinkled eye, or there's a lot of skepticism there. I think a lot of legislators have received a lot of phone calls from their constituents who are really upset about things like an underinvestment in snow equipment, an underinvestment in maintaining the system. So I think they're probably going to look for some hard reforms before they're willing to put more money on the table.
Mm. I want to ask you both a sort of final question. I'll put it this way. This is really the first glimpse of real fiscal policy in action from the new governor. Noah, what does it tell you about who Charlie Baker is as a governor?
I think he's identified good priorities, and I think that he is hopeful that he'll be able to manage in ways that allow him to keep the budget balanced, you know, without making significant budget cuts. I think this budget ultimately does rely on a lot of temporary revenue, so we're likely to have these problems going forward, and doesn't make the kinds of real investments that could make life a lot better for people in Massachusetts. I think he's doing the best he can, but it's a tight box.
Same question to you, Jim Sturgis. Best he can, faced with a $1.5 billion budget hole. But what does this say about who he is as governor?
Well, I think it says two things. One is that he is stronger in opposition to new fees and taxes than I think many people might have thought. And I think the second thing is that he is willing to break some eggs to try and get done the things he really wants to get done in terms of priorities.
All right. Well, that's Jim Sturgis, Executive Director of the Pioneer Institute, and Noah Berger, President of the Mass Budget Budget and Policy Center. Noah, Jim, thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.